Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, our producer Katie Galley. And Stone, we've got a full house, and we're talking about topics that we've talked about before, but they're super, super important.
They most certainly are. This is going to be a fantastic segment. And we do have studio full. We got entourage. We got paparazzi. We got observers. But most importantly, we've got bright, passionate guests who are out there doing some fantastic work for the market, the community, and their profession. First up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to welcome to the broadcast with Bennett Thrasher, Gina Miller, and Holly Reed. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, Gina, I thought we'd start with you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Bennett Thrasher? How are you serving folks?
Sure. Well, Bennett Thrasher is a full-service accounting firm and consultancy firm. We're one of the largest firms in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And so we provide all of those services.
And then, so your clients are small, mid-sized, large. They're here in Atlanta, but all over the country.
That's right. We serve the middle market throughout the Southeast, but also throughout the country.
And we're here to talk about women's advocacy.
That's right.
Can you talk, a term that we've been throwing around here on a variety of shows has been this diversity and inclusion. How is that? What does that look like for Bennett Thrasher?
So Bennett Thrasher started their diversity and inclusion program a couple of years ago, and we've really worked hard to develop it. We have a 5-year plan. We have goals that we'd like to meet. But one of our main portions of our diversity and inclusion committee is our Women's Leadership Development Group.
Mm-hmm. Now, for those who aren't familiar, can you talk about diversity and inclusion? What does that mean?
Sure. Well, we understand that there's a strong case to have a diverse group of people working at Bennett Thrasher, not just Bennett Thrasher, but in all firms. Mm-hmm. And that diversity is very important because it brings together people that think about things differently so that we can get a group of people that are better problem solvers because they have diverse backgrounds. So we want to attract a diverse number of associates mm-hmm. to our firm. And then we want to also have this inclusion that goes along with it. So we get everybody around the table.
So that they feel comfortable sharing ideas. And that way you get the best possible solution, not just what the white guy at the head of the table thinks.
That's right. That's right.
But this isn't just about being good corporate citizens or nice people. This has genuine bottom line impact, am I right? And I mean, we've got hard data to support that out there, don't we?
That's right. There are a lot of statistics that talk about how when we have women on the boards or in the C-suites, that those businesses perform much better.
Now, who'd you bring with you
today? Today I have Holly Reed with me. So she is our chairperson in charge of our Women's Leadership Group.
Well, welcome, Holly.
Thank you.
So, how'd you get involved with Bennett Thrasher? How long have you been with them?
I have been with Bennett Thrasher for about 2 years now. My group actually merged with Bennett Thrasher back in April of 2016. So I'm fairly new to BT, but love the culture immediately and kind of just fell into diversity and inclusion from there.
So now, when you were choosing whether to be part of them or not, was that an important component of that?
Yes, definitely. I have a very strong passion for women's advocacy and also diversity and inclusion. And seeing the culture at Bennett Thrasher really was a driving point home for me.
So that for you, you had lots of choices, I'm sure. And then this helped you decide that Bennett Thrasher would be a good fit?
Yes.
And then you decided to get involved with the women's advocacy?
Yes.
So how did that come about?
We had, I believe the diversity and inclusion had a just kind of promo party for all their subcommittees. And just I learned about a bunch of different ones. And I just have a strong passion for women's advocacy. And I was like, you know what? I could definitely bring some good ideas to the table. So I'm going to jump on board. And that's what I've been doing.
And right.
So Holly might want to tell you a little bit about her group because she works in a very male-dominated area.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm a project manager in the IT portion of Bennett Thrasher, and I've been pretty much the only female for about 4 years with them. And because it's such a male-dominated profession, I wanted to make sure that women's voices were heard and they had the ability and they knew that the opportunities were available in information technology, which is very new.
So now what's it look like when you're going to a meeting there and then you're putting on the hat of you're involved in the inclusion part? Like, how are you, like, what learnings have you been able to share to help them think about diversity?
Just making sure that my voice is heard and that I am asserting the confidence, and the subcommittee has helped me as much as I've helped them. And I bring that to my group when we have meetings, and I just pretty much try to promote the best that I can, that I have a voice and I'm here to be heard.
Now, Gina, is that what the objective is to give the skills for people that are maybe the one or two only people like them in a group to have the courage to stand up and be heard, or the tools to stand up and be heard?
Right. So Diversity and Inclusion Committee overall, we're trying to create an awareness, so an education and an awareness. And we feel that that's very important for both the men and the women and everybody in the firm. And then for the women's group, especially, we are trying to teach women some skills. So we've had women's panels where we've had an opportunity to have our female partners give advice to all the associates, and other opportunities where we've talked to the women about, taking that opportunity to say yes. So you may have heard that sometimes women are a little hesitant to take on a new project. Typically, in general terms, a man may be, 50% qualified, but raises his hand immediately to take on that opportunity. A woman will wait till she's 95, maybe 100% qualified before she'll take on that opportunity. So we want to encourage our women to say yes, because we want them to be successful.
But you also want to educate the men to understand that ratio is happening in the minds of the woman as well, right? So they can be sensitive to it and to maybe be more proactive in there, saying, okay, is everybody, who else wants to be involved?
That's right. We do want the men in the group to be our allies. Another way that men can be our allies is typically you'll have a meeting around the board table, and if it's heavily male dominated, there's a kind of atmosphere where the men are talking all over top of each other and getting their points heard. And if they need to get a little louder, they'll get a little louder. But women are more hesitant to jump in and talk over somebody. So one way for men to be allies in the boardroom is to say, hey, Holly, I think maybe you wanted to have a chance to say something here. Can we hear your opinion on this? And help bring the women in.
All right. So you guys are hitting your stride with this now. You're starting to get it figured out. It's working well. What counsel, if any, do you have for an organization that might be interested in beginning to craft a culture that's more like this? What would you tell them? And what was it like for you guys early on? I mean, was this initially really embraced, or did you run into some funny looks at first?
I don't think that we had any funny looks. We did a lot of research. We talked to other companies in the area. We talked to law firms because we feel like they're similar enough to accounting firms.
Right.
And we looked at to see what they did and what their successes and failures were. So we were very cautious when we started off, and we understand that it's a sensitive topic. But we've had support all the way along, from our top leadership group all the way through the organization. So it's been very good.
Now, this is an internal, right? So this is happening internally at Bennett Thrasher. Has any of your clients said, hey, that's kind of interesting. Is this something that you can kind of share some best practices with?
Well, we have talked to our clients, and our clients were part of the push to have a diversity and inclusion.
Oh, really?
That's right. Because we have had clients that have looked at our leadership and looked at our organization and said, it is because you have this diversity that we're willing to do business.
Mm-hmm. So that was at the core. So that's really interesting from a standpoint of from the ground up, this kind of bubbled up.
That's right. That's right. It's both a better way to serve our community and our clients, as well as serving the associates inside Bennett Thrasher.
Now, forgive me for not knowing this, but in the CPA world, is it a 50-50 world? Is it men and women, or is it primarily men?
Well, it depends on what level you're looking at. So graduates in the accounting programs come out about 50-50 male-female.
Recent
grads. Mm-hmm. And at our associate level, they're about 50-50. It's when you get up into leadership.
Partner level?
Mm-hmm. Right. And so accounting firms in general have only about 20% female leadership.
And then leadership is at the partner level. Is that what you're defining as leadership?
Mm-hmm.
And then for you, you made it to partner.
I did.
So was that something when it occurred, is Ben and Thrasher more closer to the 50-50 or you're still working on that?
Oh, one step at a time.
So, but you got loud when you needed to get loud.
That's
some years back. Is that the deal?
That's right. And I just recently made partner.
So. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
So Lee's going to be too modest to mention it. So I'm going to share it with you and everybody here on the air. Sandy Welfare over at the Women in Technology Association has officially named Lee a Manbassador.
Hey, that's great.
Because of all the stories that we do here. And actually, Lee did help make that possible. But now our producer today, Katie Galley, is actually the producer and co-host for that show. So we do have a genuine interest and in this whole idea. And for me, yes, partially because I think we're nice folks, but I am beginning to see and genuinely understand there is just a real business reason to have a more diverse, inclusive stable at your ranch, right?
That's absolutely right. And it's not just gender-based. It's also racially-based. It's different age groups. Getting that diverse background really makes a difference when you're trying to solve issues.
Now, how does this work kind of practically? You know, you say this and we want to do this and we want to include more voices and faces. Part of it, I guess, is recruiting, right? At the beginning. So you choose wisely at the beginning, right? And then once they're part of the team and you see maybe we're not as diverse or maybe the age kind of ratio is a little off, how do you kind of make adjustments on this kind of thing?
Sure. So you're absolutely right. Part of it is recruitment. And we've put into process recruiting at specific schools more mm-hmm. to get that diverse base. When the associates are hired, we want to make sure that everybody's included in the decision making. So when it comes time to hand out projects, we want to make sure everybody's included. One of the programs that we've implemented or a training we implemented was unconscious bias awareness, where people have these, you know, thoughts that are in their head and they don't even realize it. And they make these quick
decisions. Like, what's an example?
You may have a gender bias in your head. You might be a leader on your team and think, oh, well, I know she has to get home to her kids, so she won't have extra time for this project. I'm just going to hand it to him.
And so you're like kind of self-selecting them out before you even know what their situation is.
Exactly.
But you could be blind to this, right? You could be that way and not even know that about yourself as a leader, right?
That's exactly true. Yeah. That's why it's an unconscious bias awareness. And so we put the firm through training in December and had a lot of various exercises. There's, if anybody wants to participate, there's a Harvard implicit bias test that's just out there on the internet. You can pick it and you can choose which kind of test that you might want to take. And it helps you understand yourself a little bit better. So the tests are based on gender, age, race. I think there are about 30 different tests that you can take.
Now, you took the test?
I did.
So was there anything surprising for you?
Very surprising. I did take the test and I was surprised at the result because I tended to be a little gender biased. The test was, are you more biased to say men career and women family? And I found out that I was more gender biased toward women family. And I surprised myself because I grew up in a family that was all women. I was raised by my mother, my grandmother, I have four sisters. We didn't grow up with any gender roles.
Right.
If it needed to be done, somebody had to do it, right?
And that somebody was a woman.
Absolutely. Cut the grass, take out the trash, do the dishes, whatever needed to be done. So I was very surprised that I leaned that way. But how good to know that, because now when I have to make a quick decision and I think that might be part of it, I need to slow myself
pause,
down.
Right. It's just it's just that pause a beat and think about, am I just doing this kind of impulsively or am I really looking at data?
Right. Am I just using my biases or am I looking at the facts in front of me?
That's fascinating. So what do you attribute that to? Is this like kind of a genetic thing? Is it like hardwired in? I mean, or is it something you just call, it's part of the culture. It's so much around us. We're just kind of getting that bias kind of thrown on us.
I think it's the culture. So yes, I was raised in complete female household, but I still watch the Brady Bunch.
Right.
You know, I still had friends at school that had their own biases. So it just all becomes a part of
I want to know if Holly took the test.
I did.
They did? And you, and how did
she didn't want you to ask her about
this. I had a gender bias for Woman and Family, which again, surprised me as well, because I'm extremely big advocate for this.
Right.
Wow. So did across the board, was it women had a bias in the same way and men had a bias? Like, was this kind of universal?
Right. So you can actually tell how strong the bias is. And so I think there were quite a few women that still had that female family bias. But I don't think the women that we talked to had it very strongly. I mean, I was just slightly over the edge. Yeah, you can be to one extreme.
I want to take this thing. Now, my wife, if you were to separate our finances, and thank the Lord, we have no plans to do so, could buy and sell me three times over. So, but I wonder how she would score, but we got to take this thing.
Right. It's really interesting. So now you took the test. How important was it that it seems like it was very important, this training element of this. So it wasn't that we're just giving this lip service. We're actually doing things to train and kind of re-educate people. How was that kind of implemented? Did you hire outside trainers, or that's part of your HR the way that it is now? How did it get kind of where the rubber hit the road?
Right. So we've actually had a couple training programs. The first one was a diversity and inclusion program. We did hire an outside trainer, and she led some sessions on what diversity is, and then later led sessions on inclusion, which was very important. The unconscious bias awareness we took on as our own as the committee and developed our own.
So you did the beta. You were the testers of that?
We did. We did. And we, I think we had about 150 people in the firm participate in the training, and most people found it was eye-opening. The best response we had was, we want to know more. We want to know, now that we know that there is this unconscious bias out there, we want to know what we can do. And so that's our next task.
So now, how do you, you know, it's great to do this initiative, get it going, get increase the awareness. Now, how do you kind of keep the compliance to it so that people are remembering it and not kind of reverting back to old habits after 6 months or when it stops being in the news every day?
I think that's one of the most difficult things, is how do we keep this at the forefront?
Right.
We've identified unconscious bias. Now, how do we keep people from just going back to old habits? We want people to pause, think things through. So we're working on getting some additional training, whether we use an outside trainer or not. There are a lot of programs out there, and we're just trying to vet them now to see what the best way of keeping this going.
Now, for Holly, for you, how do you see this kind of moving forward in your career? Are you going to keep being involved in these type of programs? Are you?
She's going to keep being loud whenever it's necessary, right?
Oh, I'm extremely loud. I am very, very loud, and I'm going to continue to be part of this. To me, it's a culture of Bennett Thrasher, but it's also, it inspires just individuals just to have a voice, be heard, and to be aware. And Sheryl Sandberg has an amazing quote that says, we cannot change what we are not aware of. And once we are aware, we can't help but change. And that is, you know, my biggest drive is awareness. And as long as you keep promoting awareness, people are, it's just going to start to trigger.
Now, what drew you to a male-dominated industry?
I kind of got thrown into it, to be honest. It was my first job out of college, and I've held it since then. And I ended up just falling in love with it. And I don't think it has anything to do with it being a male-dominated profession, but it just happened to be that way. But I've learned so much, and I can't wait to see how many more women join our team.
So now, are you out there kind of recruiting women to join the team? Is that part of your role as well?
Not particularly, but I'm always out there pushing.
All right, before we wrap, this is for me, but this is largely my show. So what can a middle-aged white guy do who genuinely resonates with this idea? What are some things that we can be thinking about? What are some things that we can be doing? What are some things that maybe we specifically should be on guard not to do to promote this idea and live into this? Live into this.
Well, you can take that Harvard Implicit Association test.
Done, and, baby. I'm doing that.
And see, you know, be aware of your biases, but also check other people. So check and see what, you know, if you think that Lee might be making a decision based on a bias, remind him of what the facts are. You know, be friends to each other and really help each other along. slow down on your decision making, make your decisions based on facts, be a woman's ally, you know, draw women out because you want to get their opinion. Their opinion is important and it's going to be different than yours and it's going to help you in the long run.
Well, I am almost certain I'm going to come out biased, but I think it may go in the other direction because in my experience, women are smarter, they're more collaborative, they're better with money, they're more comfortable in their own skin. So it'll be interesting. That's been my life experience. But I will try to do all those things. And Lee, I will be your, what do you call it? Accountability partner on this.
Good stuff. Now, if somebody wants to learn more about Ben and Thrasher, where should they go?
So you can visit our website. It's btcpa.net. We also have a bit on there, a couple pages about diversity and inclusion and our women's leadership program.
And then are you hiring right now? Are you looking for people or is that a constant?
We absolutely are always hiring, looking for, we hire straight out of college for our accountants or, you know, our CPAs. We also look for skilled hires.
And then are there any events around diversity and inclusion that are open to the public or it's so far, is it all just internal?
It's all been internal so far, but we are looking for ways to bring our programs out into the public. For instance, we have Nancy Juno Construction, coming to talk to us in-house due to space. That's been our restriction so far. But we hope to especially network maybe with other law firms and accounting firms to share some of our resources and bring programs.
Good stuff. That's exciting. Well, if that starts happening, we'd love for you to come and talk about that when that occurs to help get the word out about events like that.
That would be great. Thank you.
Well, thanks so much for coming down and sharing these ideas with us and keep up the good work. This is fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, how about hanging out with us? We're going to visit with a couple more guests.
I'd love to.
Yeah.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us the board chair with the Green Chamber of the South. Please join me in welcoming to the show, Amanda Trice. Lucy, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
We are delighted to have you. What'd you learn in that last segment?
It's interesting because I'm here today as the first female board chair for the Green Chamber of the South.
Right.
So we're just segueing right in.
That's great.
Couldn't have planned it better.
Absolutely.
So can you tell us a little bit about the Green Chamber? How are you serving folks?
Certainly. So we've been around for 10 years serving the Southeast and our headquarters are right here in Atlanta, Georgia. And we have partners with a lot of community partners. We have Mohawk as one of our partners, Georgia Tech. So both the private sector and in education, we pull together the business community and education to serve as a think tank, really, and provide events and resources in the sustainability sector.
So now, how do you define green?
It's a great question. So green is defined in different ways by different organizations and entities, as you know, but anything that's going to help from an economic perspective, from sustainability, working with organizations to help make them more efficient, clean energy, clean tech. There's lots of ways to define green and our members define it differently as well.
So now green, does it always involve it doesn't always involve environmental, green could be broader than that.
Absolutely. And then the tech industry here in Atlanta, as you know, they're calling us the Silicon Valley of the East now.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of clean energy and a lot of tech conversations happening in the green space as well. Mm-hmm. It's also interesting working in government and looking at economic development. Green is a big, big, big topic. And it's interesting because here in Atlanta, when we're growing so rapidly, the green is at the forefront of everybody's mind when it comes to traffic and everything we're dealing with here.
So traffic, I mean, we do a show on supply chain. So we're talking about logistics. We're talking about, you know, ships that are coming into the port, super large ships that goods are transported from Savannah to Atlanta to the rest of the world, really. So it's fascinating and it involves Georgia in so many ways that maybe the layperson isn't kind of familiar with.
You're absolutely right, Lee. And what's interesting, too, is it impacts the international community. We have so many consulates here and we have a huge international community that people don't think of sometimes.
Right.
And so one of the things we're doing is partnering with people in the UK and in other places in the world. And as they bring their ministers here and they bring missions here, as being also a thought leader and helping pull together meetings with the right key leaders to have these conversations. For example, you know, I'm sure you're aware of Serenbe right here.
Sure, absolutely.
And so there's been several groups that have come over and we've taken tours of Serenbe and just really tried to pull together the community here in Atlanta and show our strengths. And it's also a conversation about how do we grow in a sustainable way? And so being a thought leader, thinking about talent acquisition too. I mean, we have a lot of HR directors and people in the HR space that are interested in talking about sustainability and what that means for them too.
Now, why don't you educate our listeners too, Serenbe? I've been there a couple of times. It's really beautiful, kind of a hidden gem. Not everybody's familiar with our version. To me, it's like kind of Napa, Sonoma.
Sure, sure. Besides having a fabulous meal that's exactly. Farm to table, which is a great place to go and have lunch, of course. It's really an interesting community because everything is done right there on the land. And even the homes they've built, they're capturing rainwater. It's an entire holistic, sustainable approach to the community.
And it is a true community from the fact they have theaters, they have events, they have hotels, sure. Inns, and homes people live in.
Absolutely. Yes. It's really beautiful. South of the airport.
Right. It's like an hour or so.
Isn't this where you and Abby go at least once a year and do that thing under the big tent?
Yeah. They used to have an event called Afternoon in the Country. It was a foodie event there for many years.
Very fun. Now,
how did you get involved in this?
So my background, I own a marketing and communications company. And previously, I worked in the dairy industry. And so I went out to a lot of farms. Oh, and I had the opportunity to get really intimate with some cows. And I had the chance to see methane digesters and see no-till and see practices on farms. And it was just really compelling to me. Politically, working in politics in my past as well, I was typically very conservative. And if you think about the division between Republicans and Democrats, typically Republicans don't embrace sustainability. They avoid talking about climate change. And my experience in agriculture really shifted my mentality that we all need to care about our environment and we all need to care about these issues because they impact all of us. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where my love for sustainability came. And then as I transitioned in being a business owner, I got involved in the Green Chamber of the South.
And then the Green Chamber of the South, they spend most of the time educating. Is that kind of the mission that all of these diverse groups come together, you know, under the umbrella of green, but to get information, to learn best practices so they can kind of share that with their communities?
Sure, there's an education component and a networking component. But I would say we have some fantastic programs that some people are not aware of. So, for example, we work with Georgia Tech on a Lean to Green program. We have the Greenhouse Accelerator program, which is really helping entrepreneurs in the green space, helping them get loans, helping them get on their feet, and really providing green jobs moving forward in a sustainable way. We also have a program where we work with different partners like universities, helping students create sustainable chapters at the universities and kind of thinking about that next generation and sustainability. So there's lots of different programs where we work with our community partners and helping bring the right people at the table to have these conversations.
Now, part of what you do some research, you learn what the best practices and trends are in the industry.
Our organization doesn't do that, but we work with our partners to do that. Certainly.
So the partners are doing it, but you're kind of herding them all together.
Serving as that think tank, absolutely, to pull everything together.
Now, do you get together periodically and have Margarita Mondays or something like that? What's the structure for hanging out with the crowd?
Sustainability Saturday.
Yes, there you go. I like the Margarita Monday idea, though. That sounds like a lot of fun. We have Green Wednesdays, and typically it's the first week of the month. So every month we get together, we bring in different thought leaders from different industries to talk about what they're doing from a sustainable perspective. We also have events. So Sustainability Interactive is our big annual event where Home Depot's there, Georgia Tech's there, you know, all of the big thought leaders, Delta's typically there. And we talk about these issues in Atlanta and what's happening. The mayor's office is involved. So it's a really big event for us. Typically happens in the fall. And this year, we're really excited to be partnering with the mayor's office and also Piedmont Park. And we're going to be working on a big farmers market event in August.
Right.
So we're very excited about that. More to come on that.
So you're very pro farmers market?
Absolutely.
Yeah, me too. I love it.
Is that, I mean, farmers markets, I guess they've been around forever, but it seems like every community has a farmers market nowadays.
Buying local is very important to people these days. And I think when you're talking about sustainability and you ask what is green, people don't think about it in agriculture, but in a state like Georgia, you know, it's really critical and it's important for us to recognize where our food comes from as well. So it's important to me too, because I have a lot of ag clients. So it's near and dear to my heart.
It's almost farmer's market season. Mike Salmon, who runs the Gwinnett studio, told me yesterday, he came and had lunch, that they're doing like an on-site broadcast at the Alpharetta farmer's market when they open. So it's almost season. And my wife and I go like almost every weekend and we bounce around, you know, we'll hit Marietta.
And Department of Agriculture has done a great job with their Georgia Grown campaign too, to really kind of drill down to having more of those across the state and engaging farmers and people who are so far removed from agriculture. Because most of us are, what, 4 or 5 generations removed from the farm. Right,
sure.
People don't know where their food comes from. So there's a huge interest in farmers markets. Absolutely.
Now, what is, from a city standpoint or community standpoint, what's some low-hanging fruit that if a community wants to do more in this area, is there some activity? Is farmers market, is that one of the activities they can do?
Well, they can join our organization. So if they visit our website, greencs.org, they can learn more about becoming a member or getting involved, and certainly partnering maybe with one of the local universities that we're engaged with and getting more involved. I think it's helpful for them to be plugged into some type of organization like ours, mm-hmm. so that they can kind of come together and brainstorm on those types of ideas, because it takes resources to pull together things like this.
And then for an organization, like, does your organization have to, it doesn't have to necessarily be in an obvious green industry. Like you mentioned, a lot of your clients are agriculture, so that probably makes sense for them to be involved with the Green Chamber. But would it, an accounting firm, would that make sense for them to be involved?
Absolutely. I would imagine that you have a recycling.
He's working it for you. He's working it.
I'm trying to That's help great. Everybody. It's all about connecting people here.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I think it's important for us all to think about the business we're in, what vertical we're in, our community, how we impact others, and how we can be more sustainable. And that's different for every organization and every entity.
And then, but it you don't have to necessarily be in, I manufacture something, so I'm going to be in it. But I can be in it, you know, we're in the radio business, but should we be in it?
Yes, you can join.
I can tell you right now, with great confidence, we're dolphin safe and gluten free, all of our programming. So we'll look into the Greenpeace.
So who's your perfect member? Like, what type of person, individual, or organization is a good member for you, the Green Chamber?
To your point, there's no ideal or perfect member. We're open to having any organization get involved. Mm-hmm. And we're really about bringing the right people together to solve some of the challenges we have. And you already mentioned traffic, and we're growing aggressively in Atlanta. So the reality is there's a lot of tough conversations happening right now and what that looks like and how we're managing growth. And even as I mentioned, HR directors talking about talent acquisition and how sustainability impacts that. It really impacts everything that we do. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of lifting up and recognizing that.
But you want to have different voices at the table that have maybe differing agendas and different ways to get to where we all want to get to.
Sure. And we have many small business owners too that are interested in this space, but they do different things. We have CPAs. It's interesting. We had an event just a few weeks back about investing in sustainability, and it was mm-hmm. an Impact Invest Forum. And so there were people there from all different types of verticals that are in the investing space, but talking about how can we make smart investing and sustainability as well. And you can make money in investing in the green space. So you're right. It can be any vertical, any type of organization or company if they're interested in having this conversation.
All right, here we go again. Yes, good mojo to be green and a good citizen of the planet and all that. And thank God for capitalism. When you genuinely serve like that, there is money to be made. And when you make the money, you can help more people. When you help more people, you make more money, and it just keeps going and going. But again, there's a genuine hard dollar benefit to learning about this and building your business and crafting your go-to-market strategy to be consistent with all of these ideas. Yeah?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a lot of us are business owners. So there is a financial piece to it, and it's important.
Right.
So actually, our previous board chair, his name is Scott Sadler, he owns a investing company, and he focuses down on investing in sustainable companies.
That's yes. who he invests in.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely, and his clients. So yes, I mean, all of us are thinking about how we can be profitable and how we can be sustainable in our businesses as well. So yes, it's certainly not an idea that just because you're thinking green that you don't have to be profitable. That's a myth.
So now, what do you need more of?
We need more engagement. That's why I'm here today. You know, we definitely want to get the word out that we're here. We've been around for 10 years and we're doing some great work, but we are so busy doing the work sometimes we don't get the word out. You know, we don't share our stories. And so one of my goals as the new board chair is really 3 things. But one is to get the word out and tell our stories more and our members' stories and the mm-hmm. organizations that we partner with. 2, it's to get the word out about all of our events. We have all these fantastic events throughout the year and we need to share about all of the events and what we're doing and how people can come sometimes for free to learn more. You mentioned the education piece and to get more involved. And 3, we need to lean into the international community. We have so much traffic happening both directions. and we can learn a lot from each other. So my background, I worked for the British Embassy at one point. So I'm really plugged into that community. And I recognize the importance of us being a thought leader here in Atlanta. So our organization is really going to work more with the international community. And we've had partners like the Canadian Consulate that's been involved with us in the past. So we just need to continue to grow in the international community.
Now, you mentioned the international community. Do you have any idea how many international consulates and kind of groups that are here in town? I mean, I think there's...
Must be a lot.
There's over 25. The last time I checked, there was over 25 right. people. Don't recognize there's that many.
Right. I think it might even be closer to 100.
Really?
At this point, it might be. You might be right.
Well, we want to help. If there's anything we can do, maybe we can talk off air about having maybe a regular segment for the Green Chamber where you come on and share your stories and your member stories. We'd be happy to facilitate something like that.
Wonderful. That's fantastic. And if people want to learn more about our organization, they can follow us on Facebook or on Twitter. Of course, Green Chamber of the South, and our website is greencs.org.
I'm feeling pretty good about myself. I don't know about you, Lee. I mean, these are.
We're trying to be inclusive. You know, how are we doing?
You're doing great.
But I mean, they're meaningful topics, and it does have that good, nice, warm, sunshiny feeling, and it does not get outside the bounds of, you know, genuine capitalism, well, which, you know, I'm a big fan of.
Yes.
Right. Hey, stay with us. We're going to visit one more guest.
Sounds great. Thank
All
you.
All right. Lee, you ready for the headliner?
I am.
All right, you're going to have to line her up with a microphone. I think this is her first appearance, so she got to really lean in there and get on it. This is going to be an interesting segment. Been looking forward to this for some time. Please join me in welcoming to the show founder with Fujiyama Wealth, Miss Junko Horvath. How are you?
Great. Thank you for having me here.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Several things that I want to visit with you about this morning, and I know that Lee does too, but can you give us just a little overview of your business, Fujiyama Wealth? What are you out there trying to do for folks?
Yeah, so we help people have better lives tomorrow. So we help people today to have better lives for the future. And I'm a certified financial planner. And I'm adding a degree for the Certified Financial Transitionist. And we specialize in helping people in transition in life. So some people lose a spouse. They lose the identity. Who am I? And we walk through the stage of life to, you know, get back to themselves and transform and go to the next stage of life. So those people we help. And also we help people who own, especially we have a lot of physician clients. So they sell business and they come to us and said, could you check the contract? We don't know whether we should sell or not. And we help them from that stage and make sure that if they sell the business, they get money and their, you know, rest of their lives are great. So yeah, we make a plan and monitor them and work together. So those are the people we work with. And so we try to create the happy, healthy, and, you know, wealthy people. So that's what we do.
Junko, can you share a little bit about your background? How did you get into wealth advising?
So I was a vice president of a Fuji Bank, which is called Mizuho Bank now. It Fuji Bank was the second largest bank in the world, and I was a vice president in a Japanese corporate department. And my contact were the CEOs of the Japanese corporations in the southeastern United States. So those CEOs come to this country, and they leave after 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. So after I develop, you know, really good rapport and a relationship with them and their corporations. So I wanted to go into something which relationship lasts for a long, long time, not just a few years.
Right.
So that's why I came to this industry 18 years ago. And I have my own company for the past 12 years.
Okay, I got to ask this. You've got this vice president post in this major organization. You come home and you tell your spouse, hey, this has been a good ride, honey, but I'm striking out on my own. What was that conversation like?
My husband wasn't happy. And we have two girls. They are 5 and 1. And we are thinking to send them to a private school, you know, for the 5-year-old. So my husband said, that's not fair. And so just give you 6 months and see how it goes, because I had a Buick from the bank and I could drive and treat the client any way they want to the, you know, 100%, you know, commission person. Mm-hmm. And then everybody told me I'm crazy, I'm out of mind. And from vice president of bank, international bank, Fuji Bank, everybody in Japan knows Fuji Bank, and you are quitting it and become 100% commission. And but I wanted to try my possibility. And because each time I brought a new client at the bank, my boss said, that's because of Fuji Bank's brand. Don't get carried away. So I wanted to try my, you know, the real potential. So that's how I came into this industry.
So now you go into the industry and you decide as a family, I guess, to say, okay, we'll try this for 6 months or a year to just see how it goes. So how did it go?
So actually, surprisingly, I did really well. I structured my life, you know, my time, like to drop my, you know, children and at the, you know, nursery and, you know, go to the office at 8:30. I see my first client at 10:30, next one 12, next one 1:30, and the 3, and last one is 4:30. After that, I go back to, you know, pick my children. So it's so structured and focused, and I did extremely, extremely well. So that's why I was so lucky.
Well, I don't know how much luck and how much skill is involved, but I'm sure some skill was involved.
And just pure hard work and determination. Good for you. Thank I am so you. Glad I asked.
So now you start getting clients. Your business, I guess, starts stabilizing where you said that, okay, we can keep doing this, right?
Yeah.
And then you've been doing it, like you said, for 12 years now.
18 years. 18. My own company, 12 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So now when you're working with your clients and you're helping them with this, because that was a transition for you, right? So you can understand of how difficult those transitions can be.
Exactly. And also I came from Japan. So, you know, I didn't know anybody here. And I came to go to a Georgia Tech for the graduate school. Mm-hmm. So I made a lot of transitions like that. So I can help people in transition.
Right. You really understand.
Yeah.
Because you've gone through several yourself. So now were your first clients Japanese clients?
Most of my clients actually are not Japanese, because mm-hmm. Japanese people, as I said, they stay here for the short term.
And then they leave.
They go back. So I don't, you know, serve for the people who are short term. So most of my clients, you know, the physicians and many are Jewish. Some are international people. Yeah.
So you meet people just through your normal networking right
Correct.
Now.
Yeah.
And you were able to fairly quickly grow a pretty, pretty good sized firm now.
Yeah. So now I'm at the stage that I want to, transfer the, you know, I want to make a community of happy people and who are not just having a lot of money, but, you know, conscious about the health and the greens and the, you know, happiness.
Right. So what happens, I guess, that people start as they accumulate wealth, and Gina, you probably see this in your business as well, they want to leave a legacy and they want to kind of do something more and share the knowledge that kind of pay it forward for the next group of people behind them, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I can't take it anymore. Can we just announce it already?
All right.
Right. So Junko, you're going to be doing a series celebrating and supporting these exact people that you're describing. We're going to be inviting them in and we're going to have conversations with them about all these topics. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm so excited. My first show is the third Thursday of April 19th. And the name of the show is Junko's Health, Wealth, and Happiness Hour. And I would like to especially invite the women who are really conscious about health and try to have a balance between the work and the life, and also try to educate other women too, to, you know, to make a community of happy people. in life.
Right. So these are successful people who are maybe at a stage where they want to reflect and then share the story about how they made it to where they are, and to give back to the kind of the next generation, to give them the skills and the tools to show them how they can do this on their own.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you guys are going to, Lee, you guys are going to co-host this show kind of in the early going. Yes. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Katie's going to produce and I'm going to listen. Is that
how we delineated the activity.
I like it. That's exciting. So congratulations
Thank
on that.
You.
And
Thank
really
you
looking
so
forward
much
to
for
watching
having-
that. Yeah.
Well, can you, for somebody who wants to learn more about your wealth advisory firm, can you share the website?
Yeah. Our website is www.fujiyamawealth.com, which is spelled F as in Frank, U-J-I-Y-A-M-A, Wealth, W-E-A-L-T-H, fujiyamawealth.com. So please visit us. Yeah, thank you
All right.
So much.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story, and we look forward to telling a lot more.
Great.
All right. Thanks to all of our guests today, and thanks to Stone Payton, our producer, Katie Galley. This is Lee Cantor. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.